Welcome to the Water Entrepreneur Podcast. This program features a series of interviews exploring the origin stories of startup founders, early adopters, and innovation champions related to their personal, technical, business, organizational, and financial journeys. This podcast is sponsored by Astera, the leader in remote Earth observation technology for the water industry. Support is also supplied by Imagine H2O, envisioning and building solutions with the world's best water entrepreneurs, and Aquarius Spectrum, providing advanced fixed-base leak detection solutions to the water utility business. And now, live from beautiful downtown Encinitas, your host, Paul Gagliardo. Welcome and thanks for joining me today. This is episode 16 of the Water Entrepreneur Podcast, and I'm your host, Paul Gagliardo. And today I'm really excited to have an old friend of mine, Yosef Yosef, co-founder and CEO of LG Sonic, as my guest. Using environmentally safe ultrasonic waves to control algae growth in reservoirs, ponds, and lakes. Hey, Yosef, thanks for being a water entrepreneur and appearing on the show today.
Hello, Paul. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah, we haven't seen each other in, 7 or 8 years now. And I'm happy to say that you have not turned gray, so your life must not be that difficult.
It's starting already getting gray. So I got married recently, so it will happen now quite rapidly.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to get grayer faster now. Congratulations. Yeah, indeed.
Thank you.
You know, I remember growing up on Long Island in New York and having phosphates banned from laundry detergent to prevent contaminating the drinking water wells and also causing unchecked algae growth in surface waters. I could see the impact of the nutrient loading when my dad and I went fishing on the Great South Bay every weekend. You know, now we have warmer temperatures overall, prolonged stratification, increased nutrient loading, which are all leading to increased occurrence of harmful algae blooms in surface waters around the globe. You were trained as a tax attorney and have an MBA. How did you get into the algae business?
It's always like funny when people will see my education and then see the company I'm running. You know, like I studied in the tax law and did an executive MBA to help the company to grow. But before studying tax law, I was studying international economy, and I had to have an internship. And that used to be in a company using ultrasound to control the algae in small water surfaces. So you can say like swimming pools, koi ponds, irrigation ponds. And the technology was already used for about 3 to 4 years, but it didn't take off from the market. So it was like there were a couple of startups trying to sell this technology. It was about 2003. So pretty some time back already. And what they did wrong is they were focusing on a wrong application, because, you know, like a swimming pool owner, everyone will expect it will be rich guy able to spend the money, right? But if you will buy a device which costs about $2,000 or euro this time in the year,
not the same.
So exactly. So if you will spend about $2,000 to just save $20 in chlorine use in your swimming pool, nobody will do it. So, and that's why you could see like these companies were starting quite enthusiastic, and after a couple of years they couldn't grow, and they reached a bit of plateau in the turnover, and they couldn't really make money. And they were more like an activist, you know, they wanted really to change the world, but they were not entrepreneurs. So yeah, and that's when the company I was an internship in, they decided to quit because there was no money to earn there. And I thought, no, the technology is quite impressive, except you need to use it for large water surfaces. And yeah, that's how I did it. Like I restarted the company. I used the ultrasound, the main technology, And I adjusted for large water surfaces. So instead of treating like 10 meters or 30 feet or whatever, I wanted to use really this technology for the large water surfaces. And to do that, you need to monitor the water. So we have asked for a patent to monitor real time the water quality, and based on this data, to treat the water. And that was a good call.
Yeah. So did they already have the intellectual property, or were they just, you know, kind of doing it without that kind of protection?
No, they were using the same sensors for fish finders.
Oh yeah.
The same ultrasound. So it was not, let's say, an ultrasonic device to control the algae. It was like on the shelf, like buy the transmitters on the shelf, and they just tried to control the algae with the pressure. And it was not successful. And that's why you could see like all the companies really after 3 to 4 years, they died more or less, all of them.
Sure.
Yeah, except ours.
So working with the swimming pools and koi ponds, were you aware of the larger, you know, lake algae, you know, other algae issues in other surface water bodies? Was that something that you became aware of as you were working with this company?
Yes. So absolutely, when I start working in the company, I start reading about the algae problem. And, you know, basically, there are three problems with the water around the world. We have too much water, too little water, and too dirty water. And with the too dirty water, so the last category, the biggest pollution around the world, it is algae, because of the climate change and because of the extremely amount of phosphate in our surface water reservoirs. So, the market was huge, except the problem was there was no technology which is able to control the algae in a very large water surface. And I always compare the algae problem with the cancer in the human body. So it grows because of an unhealthy habit, and it will grow very fast if you will keep it untreated. So, and to treat it, you need really to tackle the problem, the algae. So only stopping the phosphate is not going to help to solve the problem. You need to tackle the problem of the algae.
Right. So, you know, I always like to, you know, I loved your technology because I always, I could spin it and tell stories about it. And I would always call it an algae killer. And I know that's not accurate. So maybe just give us a quick primer on exactly how the technology works.
It's very basic. So the cyanobacteria, the blue-green algae, they need to travel up to get the sunlight, to travel down to absorb some phosphate. And what we are creating, actually, we are not killing the algae directly. We are just creating a sound barrier to make their movement much more difficult. And once we will do that, they will die slowly, and I hope painfully, during the process. So that's the whole thing. So if you will compare it, like we will just fix it to the water column. And by doing that, they will not be able to move. And not be able to move, they will not be able to multiply, and they will die slowly. That's the whole, very simple.
Yeah, interesting. I recall in the first project you did, that we did together at American Water in New Jersey, the algae cleared up quite well. And if I recall, the water became so clear that some other, I can't remember what it was, but some other issue arose. I don't know if it was grass growing or something, but it was, and I think we were both surprised, you know, it's like, hey, this fixed this, but something else happened. And so, people think water reservoirs and lakes are uniform and they're not dynamic systems, but they are. And so, you know, from that experience, you know, has that kind of informed how you run your system or how you tell the customer what's going to be the outcome of what we do?
Yeah, Yeah, so if you will go back to our installation, it was the second largest installation. So the first installation was a project in Poland. We got 1 million euro fund from the European Commission to develop the technology with the university. So we develop it, we receive this database where we can monitor the water data, and based on this water data, we can treat it with the ultrasound. So once we did that, we had our first installation in Poland. It went amazingly well. So the second installation was indeed with American Water through you. And so what we discovered there is because the algae were all gone, the sunlight could reach the bottom of the lake where the grass could grow. And because there was a lot of phosphate there, so the grass was growing really fast. And we were surprised first, like that happened. But later on, we were so happy because that's exactly what we want to do. We want to recover the ecosystem in the lake. So this grass is helping to filtering the water and to consume all the phosphate. And that's actually the story, exactly what we are doing at this moment. What we will tell our customer, we will help to recover the ecosystem because the algae are blocking the sunlight. So also the bacteria on the bottom of the lake and the sediment will not be able to grow because they will not get the sunlight. So once we will remove it, the sunlight will be able to reach the sediment. So the good bacteria will start to grow, and also the plants will start to grow. And this, all those will consume the phosphate, which will make it even more difficult for the algae to grow.
Yeah, it was, I just thought it was a fascinating, the whole, I don't want to call it an experiment, but the whole project was just really interesting. It's one of my favorite stories to tell. Can the system work in salt water as well as fresh water? Because one of the things I know, my daughter's in vet school right now. She wants to get into wildlife veterinary work. And we've been seeing issues with the manatees in Florida. And one of the issues is that the seagrass, which is their primary diet, is going away. You know, is for whatever reason. I don't know if it's the warmer water or whatever, but so I'm just wondering if, because that's in a more of a brackish water application, but will the system work in salt water and in fresh water?
Yes. So short answer is yes, we are installing these devices in salt water and the sea, open water, but also in nuclear plants. So we have two installations. We have one in NIPSCO, a nuclear plant over there, where we are treating the water, and the results there are also very interesting. And we have an installation in Sweden and in UK and in nuclear contaminated water. And even there, the algae are able to grow, and even there, we are able to control the algae. But what is interesting nowadays, because, you know, Paul, when we started, we were using this data just to control the algae, right? But because we are measuring real-time chlorophyll, phycocyanin, pH, DO, turbidity, and the temperature, we are not monitoring it from one point in the per side, but we are monitoring from multiple. So in one lake, we will have like three or four of these buoys connecting all, monitoring all these parameters and sending it to the cloud. But nowadays, we are using this data to predict the water quality, and that's quite new. So we are moving from an ultrasonic company to a Google of water company. We are receiving at this moment 2 million data sets per day from all over the world, and we are combining this data with remote sensing images from NASA and ESA. And by doing that, we can create this very high quality remote sensing images, where we can see the chlorophyll and phycocyanin. And because we have this big amount of data and we have this machine learning system, we created an algorithm to be able to see the algae growth 3 days ahead with the accuracy of 80%. Wow. And that's really, really impressive.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
You've hit on another topic that I'm really fascinated about, which is the whole remote Earth observation technologies, and, you know, whether it's satellites or airplanes or drones, whatever it happens to be. I my wife's family farms in the Central Valley in California, and they're using a lot of that to, you know, look at crop health, you know, just looking at tree canopy, you know, and they can tell a lot about what's going on. So that's really interesting. Data is king. You know, the more data you have, the more you can tease out information with it and provide actionable knowledge to people. That's really interesting. You say you are doing a work in a lot of different countries. Are there any differences with how, you know, whether it's a country or, you know, federal organization or a state organization? I mean, do they regulate algae? I don't even know if that's even possible. Or do they have rules and, you know, regulations promulgated to try to, you know, prevent algae growth? What kind of differences or similarities do you see between the different countries?
So what I know, at this moment, we have an office in the United States with our own people. And we have an office also in Brazil. We have an office in United Arab Emirates. And at this moment, we are opening an office in Kuala Lumpur. So you can say, like, we with our five offices around the world, and of course the headquarters in the Netherlands, we do have a really well understanding of how the algae problem is treated around the world. And there is a difference. There are some governments around the world which are really putting some serious amount of money to tackle that problem because they understand how dangerous that is. And you have other ones which are neglecting the problem and waiting till disaster will happen, and then suddenly there is like a panic, and they will act. So in my opinion, what we really try to do, I don't mind having competitors. Competitors are very good. What I mind is having chemical in surface water, because it's not about, you know, like we can make a lot of money just by providing data. But we will never be able to recover the ecosystem if it's addicted to heavy metal, if it's copper sulfate, aluminium-based. So what I mean, it's part of our mission to eliminate the chemicals in the water surface. And we do that with our company. We have also our own NGO. We started an NGO just to raise the awareness of the algae around the world. You know, we in the NGO, which is like futureprooflakes.org, what we are going to do there is we are going to map the whole continent Africa, all the surface water in Africa. We are going to map it, and we are going to load it with our algorithm. So we will be able to predict the water quality in the lakes in Africa. And we will do that all, let's say, without any charge. So it will be not open source, but it will be open access. Right. And we do that just for one reason. We want the whole world to understand algae problem is not a luxury problem. It is a very big threat for our water.
So do you, this might be an odd question, but are there different kinds of algae growing in different locations? I mean, or is it pretty much all this same algae, or do you have this, you know, blue green over here and green blue over there? I mean, you know, what's you know, have you seen any trends that way?
Yeah, you can compare it with human, you know, like we are all human on the whole planet, but you have different types of human in Europe than in United States than in the Arab region. So what I mean, like, they are all the same. They are all algae. They have like big families. And but they eat the same way, more or less, and they move the same ways, and they have more or less the same DNA and the same structure. So
it's really not, even though they're different, you can manage them in the same manner.
Yes. So what the real challenges are, the load of phosphate, the temperature, the change in the seasons, and that can be in the same country, that can be completely different. Mm. But also, like, why you would like to treat the water? Is the problem like logging the filters, or would you like it for safety, or is it an odor and taste problem? So, like, understanding the customer need, that's much more important than understanding the different differences in the algae types.
You've recently, I was reading your CV, and you're You've recently gotten involved with the World Economic Forum, the European Innovation Council, the Green Startup Network. My first question was going to be, you know, how do you have time to do your day job? You're getting involved in a lot more of these kind of international, I don't know if they're NGOs or, you know, how you would describe them, but tell me a little bit about the work you're doing, you know, with those organizations.
So the first question is, how do I manage it? I'm very happy. Like, LG Sonic is not Yusuf, you know, like we have a very strong international team, and we have in the United States, Greg as a general director, and he has his own team, and Lisa is managing the company on in the sales organization around the world. And we have a very strong R&D team. So what I mean, it's I'm the CEO, I'm the chairman, I give the directions, I give maybe the strategy, and maybe I'm involved, highly involved with the innovation. But that day by day job, I'm very happy I have a strong management team which are, you know, capable of managing the company. On the other hand, I like being involved with the society. I really need to pay back to the society. And to do that, I share a lot of my knowledge. Why is it hard to scale up a sustainable business? You know, like most of the scaling books about, most of the entrepreneurial books about scaling are written by entrepreneurs in the IT businesses. If it's in Instagram and Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, you know, like they will, scaling an IT business is a completely different game than scaling in green business. So I am at this moment writing a book, and the title is, Why is it hard to scale up a green business, a green tech business? So I find it very interesting to talk with entrepreneurs and to dive deep in this kind of discussions to understand that. And so I can translate my experience, but also the experience from other entrepreneurs, and to share it with others, so we can help scaling these green businesses much faster, because we will need them if you will see the climate change and if you will see that the challenges we are facing all around the world.
How many people are in the company these days?
Over 55.
Do you manufacture your product in one location, or are you manufacturing around?
No, we manufacture in multiple locations. Okay. But the manufacturing company is a different company I also own. So what I mean, we have many, we have multiple manufacturing companies around the world, but the product itself is made in the Netherlands. So it's still developed and manufactured mostly in the Netherlands.
Okay. What is your, I guess, primary selling point or value proposition to your customer? So, I mean, you talked a little bit about you have to listen to the voice of the customer and find out why they want to, what problem they have, which is being caused by the algae. So is that, and I guess it's not always municipal organizations. It could be, you know, any kind of organization that is in charge of a water body. So I'm just kind of curious as to, I mean, the potential customers come to you, or are you going outreaching to folks? You know, how does that work from a marketing perspective?
We get from both sides. So we participate to exhibitions where we will meet the customers, and our name is already very known in the market. So if you will say controlling algae, most of the people will say, yeah, go to LG Sonic. Yeah. So if we are talking about large water surfaces, large water utilities, they know us. And that's how we start talking to them. We really need to understand what is their pain. And then we try not to sell the device. We try really to help them out. And sometimes we will tell them, like, ultrasound is not the best option for you. The best option is that and that and that. So that's maybe our unique selling point. We are already successful in selling. We have already proof our technology. So we are choosing at this moment a lot of our customers. Only the customers which we are adding value to, we will work with. So if we will have now a lot of leads from swimming pools, we are not going to do it because it's not our market.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's some really huge swimming pool that they built in China, right?
Not in China. We are doing one swimming pool, by the way, which is the biggest swimming pool in the world. It's Crystal Lagoons project, and we have 600 of them. And so if we will do a swimming pool, it will be the biggest swimming pool. It's one of the most amazing, searched on internet, Crystal Lagoons. You will think it is 3D model, but it is real. That's the real case. And this swimming pool, it's amazing because it does not only look nice, but they are only using 2% of the chemical normally you will use it. Wow. In this kind of swimming pool. So it's amazing. It really like started out Crystal Lagoons. It's developed and patented by the company Crystal Lagoon, and it's the founder of the technology, Fernando Fishman. It's a smart person, and we are cooperating with them for more than 12 years nowadays. And all the swimming pool, they have our own customized equipment for this swimming pool. So it's an amazing cooperation for many years. So yeah, we do swimming pools, but only the biggest one.
When you started the company, did you kind of start as a one-man show? Did you start with a team? I'm always curious as to, you know, when you, okay, you have an idea, you have a technology, you know, do you start in your garage or, you know, do you, you know, raise some money and put a team together right away? How did you start out?
So I started out with Lisa and Rick. I loaned about 20,000 euro from a family member. And I told them, like, guys, we have about 6 months to patent the technology and to ask 1 million from European Commission. Because we knew what we want to do, the combination between monitoring and treatment on large water surfaces, never has been done before. And I'm talking about 2010, 2011. So we did that. And I told them, we have about 6 months to do it. If we will succeed within this 6 months, we will have a great company. If we will not succeed, we will lose our jobs and I will lose one member from my family. He will be very angry. So, but luckily for me, I could pay him back and the company grow. And we got like within the 7 months, the first 7 months, we got 1 million from the European Commission to invest in the R&D. Hmm. And that was really impressive. So we could culture algae and kill them with different ultrasound parameters. And that was the first database we could build. So after about 1 year, we had like this huge database, which we understand that how the algae are reacting to the ultrasound. And we were not shooting the algae and hoping it we will hit. We knew exactly which kind of ultrasound, when, what, how. And so we start deploying these buoys around the world. And then the whole world become our own database. Because now we had the whole world with all the data we are receiving. So, and then we start editing sensors. So at this moment, we have also weather station. And we recently launched a PO4 sensor, a microfluid PO4 sensor, where we will measure the phosphate from different depths.
Oh, wow.
In the water. It's really amazing technology. We have licensing it from an university in Ireland. And so receiving all this data, it's maybe one of the most beautiful things happened to Algisonic.
As your company has grown, obviously your role has changed.
Yeah.
I've talked to some folks that, you know, they really liked it when it was a two or three person startup and they could control everything. And then as the company got bigger, they had to delegate and some people had a very hard time with that. Some people, you know, that was easy for them. And not only that, but they understood the progression of a company as it grows, the founder, the CEO's role is going to change, you know, naturally, organically. How did you find that that your role changed? And, you know, did you embrace it? Did you think it was easy? Did you expect it? You know, what was your journey that way?
So easy is never, you know, like being an entrepreneur is a day by day fight, day by day raid, and you have to win it every day. So you are never there. So it's never easy, but what I did after 4 years where we started growing really fast, I have face these challenges. And I thought, like, okay, there's one of the two, or I need to hire some executive director, which is going to run the company and take it to the next level, or I'm going to do it, but I cannot do it with the skills I have at this one. So I have to do an executive MBA. So I did a scientific based executive MBA because I really wanted to understand the entrepreneurship in the deepest level of science. And maybe that one was one of the best investment I have ever done. You know, like I could speak with the peers and again, like every day it's a different challenge. So yeah, but that's what keep us energized. And are we there? No, we just started. You know, like every day I come to the work and I have the feeling it is the start of something beautiful.
I know that I don't know how much other investments you've gotten, but you know, whenever you know venture capital companies or private equity, you know, invest in a company, they always have an end game in mind before they invest. You know, do you have an end game in mind for your company?
So I'm still 100% owner. You don't hear that sentence these times.
No,
and for sure, yeah, and for sure with the size of our company. So what is the end game? I think we are too early to think about the end game. So we will see where we will go. At this moment, we have one of the greatest teams around the world. I really don't have. Maybe I'm a too old fashioned entrepreneur. So we will see. It can be an IPO, and it can be just being like that and growing slowly. And enjoying the process. So I will see. Both options are open. We are receiving a lot of offers from VCs to invest in the company. And at this moment, I will say we are not interested.
You are very unique in the business. All the people I've talked to, that's I think you're the only one that still owns, you know, 100% of the company. I mean, almost everybody else has given away, not the store, but, you know, a significant portion of the store. What advice would you give somebody who's considering, you know, starting a company in the water business or in the green space, you know, because I know that's a really a big issue for you?
So don't do it if you want a quick success. If you want a nice story to tell your friends after 3 years how great you are, don't do it. Go into an IT business. So it's a long process. It will take about 5 to 8 years before you will become really successful. And I mean like a profitable growing company. So nowadays you can raise money quite easy, but building a company in the green business, hardware based, it's tough. Because you need to manage not only the customer, but also the process, the manufacturing process. A manufacturing process itself is very, very tough process. And then, you know, like it's very conservative market. We have faced it when we were sitting together, Paul. It was because of you, which really believed in the technology and give us the chance to do the installation with American Water. Otherwise, it's very hard for an operation person to accept a new technology he don't know, from a company he don't know, from an entrepreneur he don't know. There are too many unknown to install the technology. And that's actually what the book is about, the three unknowns. So my advice for somebody which would like to invest or which would like to start in the green businesses is understand it's a marathon, it's not a sprint, you know? But if you will do it, the impact and the satisfaction you will get out of this process is you cannot compare it with anything else. You know, like we have a project in Dominican Republic where there is a water reservoir like for 2 million people. And that water reservoir is a hydraulic dam, actually. That hydraulic dam, it's used for drinking water source for 2 million people. And there was a big algae bloom there and the water was contaminated. And then I went there. Even so, the project was very interesting from economics. It was not the economics I was interested in. I was interested to have a serious impact on the human life and there, because the poor people will drink the water from the tap. So it was like when we succeeded after 4 months, and I went back and I saw again, like the water was really clean, and people were so happy with the results. And we are still in very close contact with the government and the water companies over there. So when I was there and I visited and the water was clean, and I think that feeling is much better feeling than all the innovation prices I have been. So yeah, my tip is understand growing a green business is not about the money. It's also about the serious impact you can create on human life. And I call that double green. Green on the planet and green from the dollars. If you will be able to combine both of them, you will be able to have a very, very nice life with your business. If you will be behind one of the two, then just don't start a green business.
Great. That's really good advice. I find a lot of the people I talk to are, you know, have the greater good of the society in mind, and also, you know, somehow merge that with their entrepreneurial spirit, you know, to be able to achieve those goals. Because, I mean, unless you're, you know, Jeff Bezos or, you know, Elon Musk, you can't just throw money at something and not worry about if you're going to get any revenue back. And so, you know, you've got to have a viable ongoing business to be able to make change. So, you know, that definitely seems to be a common thread with a lot of the people I talk to. So yeah, this was great. You know, really interesting conversation. I'm so happy to kind of check in with you again. And, you know, maybe the next time you're in the States, we can figure out. I know I saw that Lisa was at WQTC. I don't know if it's this week or not. So yeah, I'll be getting back on the rubber chicken circuit pretty soon. So I'll get to meet all my good friends again. But thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. This was a great conversation.
Thank you very much. And definitely when I will be in the States, I will give you a call.
Thank you all for listening. This podcast was brought to you by Astera, with additional support from Imagine H2O and Aquarius Spectrum. The producer is Anna Gagliardo. Theme music by Gabriella Gagliardo. Yes, this is a family affair. Your host is Paul Gagliardo. If you have any questions about this podcast or the series, please contact us at thewaterentrepreneur@gmail.com. And please follow us on Instagram. We hope to see you all again next time.